What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go!
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go!
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go!
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
All right, big show today. Fantasy Football Today. We got Scott Fish joining us. He is the 2019 FSGA Humanitarian of the Year. He organizes an amazing fantasy football event. He's a charitable guy. He's an awesome, nice guy. He's joining us today. He's joining us tomorrow on Twitch. He didn't draft a wide receiver until round 5, was it, yep. Scott?
Yep, that's right.
In the draft that we're going to review today. Welcome back to the show, Scott Fish. Also, Heath and Jamie are here, blah, 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 whatever. What's up, man?
Oh, what's going on? Excited to be here. I absolutely love this show, so I'm glad to be here.
Whoever's running the FSGA needs to rename the Humanitarian of the Year award the Scott Fish Award.
Well, if they do that though, Scott probably can't win it anymore, right? Like once they name it after you, you pretty much can't win it.
I think that's probably a bigger honor.
Yeah, I agree. That would be a bigger honor. I don't know that it should be named that though. But, well, it was very awesome for them to give me that.
All right, let me tell everybody what's coming up today. We'll talk a little bit about Cam because Heath didn't get his chance last night, and I want to know what Scott thinks about Cam. We will review a half PPR draft that we did 2 weeks ago, and it was, you know, the CBS guys plus Scott plus Jake Seeley of The Athletic, Mike Tagliere of Fantasy Pros, Mike Wright of the Fantasy Footballers, Liz Loza of Yahoo, Brad Evans of FTN. So it was an industry draft and some interesting results. Josh Jacobs going, I think, seventh overall. He was the sixth running back off the board. We'll talk about things like that. We've got top fives coming up all this week after today. And then we'll talk about the Scott Fish Bowl and the crazy scoring. Get your calculators out if you're in the Scott Fish Bowl, but Scott's going to help us out how to draft best strategies and things like that. You can follow him at ScottFish24. So tell us about yourself and about Fantasy Cares.
Sure. I guess about myself, I've been in the industry for a good 15 or so years and full-time. I run a commissioner service called Safe Leagues. I basically run dynasty and redraft leagues. I've been doing analysis on the radio and on podcasts for years. I have a weekly radio show in season on syndicated around the nation and on iHeartRadio called Fantasy Football Weekly. I do with Paul Charchian. And I run the Scott Fish Bowl, which is a big event to help raise money to buy toys for kids at Christmas time, fundraising effort through Fantasy Cares. And this year we're also giving a large amount of money to the Injustice League. So we have in previous years, we help other causes as well. It's not just Toys for Kids, even though that's the main one. We helped during the hurricanes, the hurricane in Texas, we gave to that. We've given to food shelves. We've done a lot of relief efforts as well. So it's very good. I like to push out there. In your league, take one of those entry fees, give it to charity. You're not going to miss it. You're doing something awesome. There are hundreds of thousands of fantasy leagues. If we all banded together just a little bit, we could do a lot of good out there.
The nicest human being in fantasy.
Whoa, enough about Heath. What's up, Heath?
he's like Bizarro Adam Azer.
Well, I don't know why you say, you know, I'll have you know, Scott and I were talking before the show started. There are a few Scott Fish Bowl spots left. This might be the year I might join Scott Fish Bowl.
What? Like, Do you realize that a lot of people, for the first time, will be listening to our podcast today because we have Scott Fish on and they are fans of Scott Fish and everything that he has done? And so, like, oh, well, let's check out this podcast. And these people have wanted for multiple years to get into the Scott Fish Bowl. And then we've got Adam Azer, our host. You know, there's a couple spots left. I might decide to do it this year. What an absolute jerk.
So maybe yeah, I should auction off my spot to charity.
You really are a jerk about this.
I'm sorry. I have a lot of leagues. Like I'm trying to make
you're
time.
Not making things any better. Now, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. I don't remember when the first time was when we had Scott Fish on the podcast. And I threw a number out there that I think we thought maybe was too big at the time. I asked Scott if this was going to be the year that Fantasy Cares cracked 50,000. I think it's done that like 3 years in a row now, right?
At least two. It hit 60 last year. It was 44.5 the year before.
But it seems this year
it's going to hit, yeah.
From what I've seen, like this year has been about the most aggressive start ever. So we might as well just go ahead and hit 75,000 this year.
Hey.
You'd think it could, but this year I changed gears a little bit. I mean, we have the Pod-a-thon, we have the t-shirts, we have celebrity eliminators. We're raising monies in a bunch of different ways, but I challenged everyone in SFB and I challenged people on Twitter to, there's so many things going on out there from COVID to race relations and everything that I told people we need to race relations, racial injustice. I told people, get out there and give to what you're passionate about. If it's not us, that's fine. Just give to what you're passionate about because a lot of charities need money this year. And so the numbers might be down this year for us personally, but I think that the money raised overall is going to be far higher, even if it doesn't come to us to give to what we give to.
So Scott, there is a spot open for Adam right now.
Yeah. I have, looks like about five, I have about five spots and then several more that are earmarked for contests.
So let's do this. Adam, if you say yes right now to being in the Scott Fish Bowl, I will donate $500 in your name.
$500?
In your name.
That's it? Yes. I'm in. yes.
There we go.
A thousand times yes. I am in the Scott Fish Bowl. And now I'm very excited.
There you go. So Scott, I'll put the donation in today in Adam's name.
We'll talk to you later.
That's terrific. That's awesome. Wow. All right. Amazing. Making history here on FFT. All right. Thank you, Jamie. That's incredibly generous of you. And thank you, Scott. And let's get into fantasy football. So Cam Newton, we did a bonus pod last night. It was me, Jamie, and Ben. So, you know, you heard what Jamie and Ben Gretsch have to say about it. Let's hear what Heath and Scott have to say about it. And Jamie, you're allowed to talk too, especially after that donation. So, all right, Heath, where is he in your rankings?
This is all very, very, very subject to change, but I moved him up one spot ahead of Gardner Minshew. He's in that QB14, QB15 range. Not someone that if you were doing a draft today and you only wanted to draft one quarterback and everybody else drafts two in your league, not someone you could draft solely as your starter. But what I wrote in my Dynasty Rankings piece this morning that I updated because it was all about Cam Newton was that he might be one preseason game away from being a consensus top 10 redraft quarterback. If we just see him on a football field looking like Cam Newton in a game, mm-hmm. he's going to skyrocket up the rankings. So I wouldn't blame anybody for ranking him in the top 12 right now. I still believe that he has top 5 upside, but the Patriots didn't guarantee him really anything at all. It's possible he shows up at camp and he's just not Cam Newton anymore because of all of the injuries. And in that case, they could cut bait before the season even starts.
Okay, Scott. So last night we were debating like Aaron Rodgers versus Cam Newton, Ben Roethlisberger, Daniel Jones, guys like that. In fact, Jamie has it. Jones, Roethlisberger, Rodgers, Cam. He has Cam 16th. You just heard Heath 14th. So how about you? Where do you think you'd have Cam Newton?
I think I'd have him about in the same range right now. I weirdly would still want guys like the upside of Joe Burrow ahead of him too. Like I think I would have him probably in that 16-17 range as well. Maybe even I'd have to think about maybe even Drew Locke ahead of him too. It'd be very that's tough. I just love Locke's weapons and I think they're going to really let him air it. But Yeah, I probably have Cam about there. I think Heath is right on the, we just need to see it from him. I honestly don't see, unless Cam really, really craps the bat, I don't see them letting him, just cutting him. It feels like they generally like some vets like that in the room, but I suppose they have Hoyer. No, I can see a couple good preseason games, him jumping into the top 10 because people love that rushing upside in quarterbacks. But right now, I just have to see it. I trust in so many other quarterbacks to play a full 16 games or close to. So probably late teens for me.
Jamie, I'll start with you. Which Patriots player is affected the most, either positively or negatively, with Cam Newton if Cam Newton is a starting quarterback?
The only guy that I adjusted, and as we talked about this when we first did the podcast Sunday night, is N'Keal Harry. I don't think Edelman changes very much just because I think he was so dependent on the rapport with Tom Brady. So, you know, whether it was going to be Stidham or now Cam or, you know, who knows, maybe Brian Hoyer surprises us. But, you know, with Cam, I think, you know, Edelman will be good. I moved him up one spot, I think, in PPR. So he's at 30. I think I had him at 31. And Harry, I didn't have ranked in my top 60. He was just outside that. And now he's just outside the 40s. You know, he's right around 50 for me. So, you know, about a 10 spot, you know, jump for Harry. Now, like I said last night, he goes from a guy you were drafting as your fifth receiver with upside to a guy you can probably draft as your fourth receiver and maybe somebody that can end up starting for you at times if things go right for him. Because I do think that Cam will challenge down the field. And I think that's what N'Keal Harry needs.
Heath?
Yeah, I think the guy that moved the most was Harry. I couldn't quite get him into my top 60 because there are just so many wide receivers and he showed us so very little last year. But I mostly agree with the things Jamie said. I'm a little bit worried. It's a two-sided coin, but I'm a little bit worried what this means for Sony Michel, because obviously Cam Newton's one of the greatest red zone rushers in recent history. And Michel is very, very reliant on those touchdowns. And so I do think like the share of the running back carries probably gets smaller with Cam there. The share of their touchdowns gets smaller, and they still have 17 running backs, three of which will probably have great games at some point during the season.
All right, Scott, final word. Any change? James White, Sony Michel, N'Keal Harry, Julian Edelman, whoever. Any big change for you?
Not really, because I think James White is going to be similar with Cam that he would have been with Stidham or was with Brady, maybe a slight downgrade to the offense as a whole, from Brady, but from Stidham to Cam, maybe Jamie's got a point on the better, longer deep balls. So maybe that does play into Harry a little bit better and less Edelman. So I can see a slight upgrade for Harry, but otherwise I'm not as worried. Michelle just like, I think half his touchdowns came in one game, Heath, last year. Like, he's not even really that great of a proficient touchdown scorer. So I don't know how much I move Michel anyway. He's a guy that I'm fine with grabbing as my, you know, fourth running back because he's going to get a lot of volume. But other than that, most of the guys stay the same for me. Maybe Harry a slight bump. I agree with that analysis.
Yeah, I just want to ask you a quick question because I know you mentioned, you know, the stuff that you do with Dynasty. You were talking redraft, taking Burrow and Locke ahead of Cam, or is that more a Dynasty thing?
Definitely in Dynasty, but even in redraft, I tend to be an upside chaser. I'm a guy with a quarterback like that. I can see all the weapons that Burrow has, and even though rookie quarterbacks don't have the greatest track record, when you do hit on them, that we're not talking about my QB1 here. We're talking about my backup QB. And when I go for a backup QB in a one QB league or even super flex, I tend to shoot at the high upside QBs instead of the safe guys. The safe guys I grab with my QB1s.
Okay. All right, so that's going to wrap up our Cam discussion for now. Some things to promote. The Scott Fish Bowl, we're doing a mock draft. So if you're participating in it and you want to see, look, there's a lot of different rules. Superflex, tight end premium, points for completions and incompletions, or negative points for incompletions. Scott's going to talk about that later, but we have a mock draft Tuesday on Twitch. That is twitch.com/FFToday. It's also half PPR and half point per first down. So there's a lot going on there. That's 7 p.m. Eastern Tuesday night on Twitch. We're going to be doing this, and you can follow along. You can ask us questions, and you can subscribe if you become a Twitch subscriber to our channel, twitch.com/FFToday. And by the way, if you have an Amazon Prime account, you can link that to your Twitch account for a free month. You will have a league, a Twitch league. You can participate in that Twitch league with us. You can be one of the 8 people we'll select. So that's pretty cool. Twitch.com/FFToday. And we've got 4 more episodes coming up this week. It's top 5 week. Fun topics like top 5 wide receivers after round 10, 5 players we're avoiding. And we'll have a real fantasy topic on Friday, but we're also going to have the top 5 best patriotic movies since it's July 3rd that day. Scott, what's the best patriotic movie ever?
Patriot? No.
It's up there. It's going to be on my top 5.
Born on the 4th of July? I'm not sure. Yeah. Independence Day?
That's Independence Day is very interesting. It's fair. It's like so cocky, like, for Americans to think that we're saving the world in a global effort on July 4th. The very arrogant.
Let me guess, for you, Independence Day isn't a July 4th movie.
I don't really think it is. It has nothing to do with America. It just a you know, I don't know. I think, like, honestly, Rocky IV is probably going to be in my top 5. That's a pretty patriotic day.
This is a terrible category, and you're still going to have the worst choices.
This is a great category. People will be into it.
There's only one answer. It's Die Hard.
Oh, please.
It's always Die Hard.
It came out in the summer.
That's right. I think it came out in July. All right, half PPR draft. So before we get into Scott's team, I have, and I'm sure you guys won't agree because you don't agree with anything, I have the 5 most interesting picks of the draft, according to me. And they are Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry, 7th and 8th overall. James Conner, 33rd overall. Keenan Allen, 53rd overall. And Mark Ingram, 65th overall. Wow. Let's start with the first two, Jacobs and Henry, 7th and 8th overall. Jacobs was RB18 in this format, but he missed 3 games. He was RB13 on a per-game basis. Derrick Henry was RB3. Now, you hear me talk a lot about 50 catches. Aaron Jones screws up all my numbers by having 49 catches last year. So if we go with 49 catches, over the last 4 seasons, there have only been 2 running backs who have finished top 5 in half PPR with less than 49 catches. Now, these guys were drafted 6th and 7th at running back, but I think it's still a very relevant number. Only 2 running backs, Ezekiel Elliott and Derrick Henry. Zeke in 2016, Henry last year. So, you know, it's relevant. However, there have been 18 running backs in the last 4 seasons, so 4 or 5 per year, that have finished top 12 with less than 50 catches or 49 catches. All right, that said, Jamie, what do you think about Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry in round 1, right after the top 6 picks, which are basically, you know, consensus in some order?
I'm coming around a lot on Jacobs. I think he's going to have, I think, a very solid season. I've actually moved him ahead of Miles Sanders in non-PPR and half PPR. I think he could be one of the guys challenging to lead the league in rushing this year. So I think he's a little too soon in this draft, but I do think he's now a borderline first round pick if you're going to see a lot of running backs go in the first round, which I think is going to happen. Henry, you know where I come out on Henry. I mean, I'm not a Derrick Henry guy this year, but this is the spot he's probably going to go in non-PPR and half PPR. If he's healthy and plays 16 games, he's going to be, you know, a potential top 5 pick. So we saw it last year, how good he could be, what the upside is for him. He could lead the league in rushing. He could lead the league in touchdowns, certainly from, you know, just on the ground. So if you're inclined to take, you know, 2 guys that are going to be very involved in their offense, carrying the ball, probably limited in the passing game, these are 2 guys you're going to gravitate toward. I like Joe Mixon better than both, but this is the right range for them to go if we're going to see, as I think we expect, a lot of running backs going in the first round.
Well, Scott, you took Joe Mixon. You took him 10th overall. Then Jamie took Miles Sanders. So I guess I'll just recap the first round so you can see who Jacobs and Henry were taken ahead of. So it's McCaffrey, Barkley, Kamara. Heath took Zeke, then Dalvin Cook, Michael Thomas, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry. Then it was Davante Adams. Jane, this is a 3 receiver league, right?
Yes.
And a flex. Okay. Davante Adams, then Joe Mixon, Miles Sanders, and Julio Jones. Considering it's half PPR, 3 receivers and a flex, No Tyreek Hill in this round. No DeAndre Hopkins. You know, so very running back heavy with just three wide receivers. But you took Mixon. Of course, Jacobs and Henry were off the board. But if all three of them had been on the board, Scott, who would you have taken?
Mixon. I actually took Chubb in the second round, and I have Mixon and Chubb ahead of both Jacobs and Henry, but in that order. So it's we're splitting hairs here. But I'm with Jamie on that. It's just the receiving potential out of really both Mixon and Chubb compared to the other two, but definitely Mixon. It's just the way he looks in the receiving game, if the Bengals got their act together and passed to him more, and the way Joe Burrow used Clyde at LSU, if they can get that going with Mixon, because he just looks good in the passing game. That I know the stats haven't bared it out yet. I think he has great potential in the receiving game, and so I would take him above both those. I'm actually surprised you didn't. Did Leonard Fournette's 2017 not hit your point per game stats on that? Because I feel like he had like 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns in 13 games.
I don't do per game.
Oh, you don't do per game. Okay.
I was going to say.
Well,
because you listen
to our show enough. You've been on enough. Adam skews things the way he wants.
No, I don't.
It's the Adam Azer stat.
That's ridiculous.
No. We just kind of branded the differently.
50 to 49 catch thing is perfect.
If he were to lower his camera, he's got the eye from CBS, but underneath it says Adam Azer stats. That's the way he likes to.
No. It's who finished in the top 12. I mean, look, you start getting into per game, guys miss time. Yeah. Not going to get to 50 catches.
That's true.
Whatever, you could do it that way as well.
No, I just when you were saying that, I was like, he's going to mention Fournette's 2017 any second here, because that guy was pretty beastly for.
Yeah, and Fournette, actually, I was going to mention him in this draft too, because he went 36th, which was pretty high, but I'm trying to pick some players that we haven't talked quite as much about. Heath, something tells me that if you were picking in the back half of the first round, you had the fourth pick and you took Zeke, that you wouldn't have taken Jacobs, and you wouldn't have taken Henry, and you wouldn't have taken Mixon, that you would have taken Davante Adams.
Yeah, definitely over Mixon, definitely over Jacobs. Half PPR, like definitely in non-PPR, I'm taking Henry over Davante Adams. But in half PPR, it's really, really close. I don't really, like, I understand the hope and the upside for Josh Jacobs, but it's pretty much that he could just be what Derrick Henry was last year, I think. I don't think the Raiders have given us any signal that they're going to open up what he does in the passing game very much, and I don't think the Raiders are going to be good enough to run as much as the Titans did last year. So I've got Henry considerably ahead of Jacobs. I'm okay with him in that spot. I might have taken Adams over him, though.
It's kind of interesting. What is the argument for Jacobs over Derrick Henry? I don't really think you can use the injury argument, you know, when talking about Jacobs.
Yeah, Jacobs still hasn't shown us that he can handle that type of workload.
Right.
But I think the argument would be, don't chase last year's stats. Pick the guy that's going to do that this year.
Right. I feel like Josh Jacobs is awesome. But so is Derrick Henry. I don't know. I understand why somebody would take Jacobs over Henry. He's younger and it matters at running back. But I guess I can't really come up with a great reason for it. Right?
I can't.
I'm just terrified of Derrick Henry coming off the workload from last year. You know, so I think, you know, he said it, you know, I'm never going to be somebody that chases last year's stats when I think there's a player that has similar type of upside. I think they profile somewhat similar because, again, the passing game work. I do think there's a little bit more likelihood that Jacobs is involved in his passing game more so than Henry is with his, because of the what the potential could be. I mean, you know, Henry's been sort of, you know, 18 catches last year was his career high. You know, I don't know if we're going to see a scenario of, you know, Jacobs being worse than that. So I think he could get to like 35 catches. I don't think he's going to be a 50 catch guy or 49 to make your list, but you know, 30 plus, I think he can get in that range. And I'm pretty confident in that.
Okay. Let's move on to our next interesting pick. It was James Conner. Connor goes 33rd overall, ninth pick of the third round, 18th running back off the board. So 18 running backs and 33 picks. And he was RB7 on a per game basis in 2018. He played 13 games, 973 yards and 12 touchdowns on the ground, plus 497 yards and one touchdown receiving. He was just outstanding. So, Scott, if I take a look here at James Conner going one pick before you, you took Patrick Mahomes. After Jonathan Taylor, which was Ben Gretsch, Ben Gretsch is just going to take Jonathan Taylor earlier and earlier every draft, middle of the third round now. After Chris Carson, after Todd Gurley, before David Montgomery, before Melvin Gordon, who went pretty late, I guess, compared to the other, before Le'Veon Bell. All right, what do you think about James Conner there in the middle of that?
I'm fine with that spot, I guess, but I'm never going to be the one to take him. I understand the end of year stats looked great, but in the first 8 weeks last year, he had 6 different injuries. I mean, he's just constantly hurt, and I never know when that next injury is going to be a 5-game miss. I just can't trust it. I know that the Steelers running back is one to have, even when it's Benny Snell getting 20 carries, you know, like they love to go to one running back. And when that's James Conner, it's going to be great. I just can't trust that. I don't have a lot of faith that every week I know I can sit and plug him in. And we're talking about a third rounder. You're like the core of your team. I like to be a lot safer in those early rounds.
So you would have taken Mahomes over him if they were both on the board?
Yeah.
Would you take David Montgomery?
I want to clarify, because Scott went running back. So if you had maybe gone a different route, would he be somebody in consideration for you? No, I know what you're saying, and I totally agree with you, you know, in terms of the safety factor. But I think, like I said, we're going to see all these running backs get pushed up in drafts. And so if you had gone a different route, would you have considered maybe Conner there?
I would have definitely considered it. If I had gone, you know, something like wide receiver and then, you know, a Kittle Kelsey type or some kind of interesting where I wasn't sitting on a running back already. I definitely would have considered him there just because when he does play, he's that good. But if I already have my main starting running back, he's likely not a choice for me.
The three running backs who went right after him, Montgomery, Melvin Gordon, Le'Veon Bell, Heath, how many of them would you take ahead of James Conner?
I would take Le'Veon Bell and Melvin Gordon ahead of Conner, but they're right in the same range. Like, I don't think he went necessarily maybe a half a round too early here, but this is right about the range where you'd expect all of those guys to go. And in half PPR, Bell and Conner are almost a push for me. In full PPR, I'd much rather have Bell.
What about Montgomery?
I've got Montgomery a little bit behind that group.
Okay.
Just because I think he's got a bit of a catch problem as well, obviously, with Tariq Cohen there.
Yeah.
I ask the questions around here, Scott. All right, let's go to our next one. Keenan Allen, Jamie, 53rd off the board, 24th wide receiver selected. 3 straight seasons top 12 in PPR. 3 straight seasons top 15 in non-PPR, so obviously top 15 in half PPR as well, because he's a high catch guy. I think 97 or more catches 3 straight years for Keenan Allen. He's wide receiver 24 in this draft. He goes just after five wide receivers in a row in the 5th round. DK Metcalf, AJ Green, T.Y. Hilton, Keenan Allen, Stephon Diggs. And Heath and I both passed up Keenan Allen. I passed him up for DK Metcalf, Heath for T.Y. Hilton. Jamie, what do you think about this value here for Allen?
I think it's good value, but it's the spot I expect him to go, you know, the range I expect him to go in behind the receivers that were taken. I just think, you know, we're going to see a downgrade for him with the quarterback change. So, you know, with what Tyrod Taylor is going to do by comparison to Phillip Rivers, eventually Justin Herbert, I think at some point, you know, whether it's late in the season or however things go early in the year for the Chargers, but I just think it's a downgrade for Allen, you know. So he'll elevate the quarterback play because he's an elite talent, but will he elevate the quarterback play enough to help his own numbers? And I think that's the concern. So for a guy that doesn't typically score a lot of touchdowns, for the receptions that are probably going to come down, the yards will come down with it. I just don't think that he's the same guy anymore without a quarterback like Rivers running the offense.
Do you think the three wide receivers who went ahead of him, Metcalf, Green, and Hilton, were good picks? Mistakes?
No, I think they're great picks. I mean, you know, Metcalf, we've talked a lot about, you know, if things work out well for him, if he gets over you know, the 120 target threshold. Certainly if the Seahawks open up the offense a little bit and give Russell Wilson what he wants, he could be an absolute superstar. T.Y. Hilton benefits with Phillip Rivers. You know, that's the swap. So I think, you know, Hilton healthy is they're very similar. They're not high touchdown guys. You know, the catches obviously are different, but you know, just in terms of how they score touchdowns, I think Hilton will benefit with a quarterback like Rivers. And then A.J. Green is the wild card here. But, you know, if he's anything close to what A.J. Green typically is, then this is a steal in round five.
All right, Jamie. Listen, man, why are you disrespecting Mark Ingram? Why are you taking Kareem Hunt over Mark Ingram? Why is everybody disrespecting Mark Ingram? Guy's not even a top 60 pick. 65th overall, Mark Ingram. Jamie, I'll start with you because you did take the running back who went just before him, three picks before Ingram. You took Kareem Hunt. You also took Cam Akers. So with back-to-back picks, you go Akers in round five, Hunt in round six, and you leave Mark Ingram, who was like top 10 last year, a career overachiever when it comes to touches. Like, he just scores so many touchdowns. What were you thinking, sir?
This was non-PPR. I would have taken Ingram ahead of both those guys. But in half PPR, PPR, you know, I think you're going to see Akers was. So the way I started my team was with Miles Sanders, then three receivers. And so I was looking more upside at that point as my RB2, as opposed to, you know, a little bit more of a safe option. And maybe that would have made more sense to take Ingram over one of those two guys to have, you know, one upside play, let's say Akers, and then a little bit more of a safety valve in Mark Ingram. But the addition of J.K. Dobbins, as we all know, he's going to be 31 by the end of the season. So he is age 30 by the time the year starts. I do think that what the Ravens are saying is probably going to ring true, that they're going to give Gus Edwards a couple of touches and maybe Justice still plays a little bit on offense. But we know Lamar Jackson is going to dominate this offense as well, running the ball. So we've said this time and time again. Heath has pointed it out, the regression coming for him. He's not going to catch five touchdowns again on the limited number of receptions that he had last year. And so I think with everything trending in the wrong direction for Ingram, he might be safer than Hunt. But Hunt, as we saw, once he was involved in the passing game, was probably, I don't know, better at that point in the season, but, you know, on par. And if Hunt gets a bigger role carrying the ball, I think he has a higher ceiling than what Mark Ingram does.
All right, Heath and Scott, I want you guys to weigh in there. Start with Heath. Mark Ingram, 65th overall. What do you think about that?
It's fine. Like, I definitely am going to have him ranked higher than that in non-PPR, but he will be in most versions of my bust column this year because he is going to regress so hard on the touchdowns. I think he's probably going to lose a few touches. Like, last year, they gave him 35% of their total rush attempts when Gus Edwards was the second best back on the team. Now it might be that Mark Ingram's the second best back on the team. I think there's a real risk, not just that Ingram at his advanced age gets hurt or isn't as good, but by midseason that it's just clear and obvious to everyone that J.K. Dobbins is better than Mark Ingram. So I've got a lot of concerns about Ingram. There's absolutely nothing there for him in the passing game. I think there's a decent chance he's not a top 30 back.
All right. On the other hand, Scott, Gus Edwards had 133 carries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Dobbins, it's kind of like the same thing I say about Jamal Williams and A.J. Dillon. I mean, is Dobbins going to get 133 carries? Jamie thinks they're going to use all of the guys. But what do you think about Ingram, I guess, and this value?
I think the fact that Gus Edwards got that many carries says that they're going to give J.K. Dobbins the chance to prove himself to the tune of 75, 100 plus carries, whatever. And I think he's going to do it. I think he's not wrong. I think it's very possible, closer to probable, that J.K. Dobbins is the better back, and they're going to realize that by season end. Mark Ingram is a guy that you absolutely love to get as your running back three or four, definitely three, but definitely four and maybe three, but as your RB1 or two, I'm just not loving it. I believe Jamie was the one that said every single arrow is pointing in the wrong direction. I believe Jamie said, and that feels like the exact way to describe Mark Ingram for this year.
By the way,
just one more point. I think they kind of learned their lesson a little bit, which is, you know, speaks volumes to not just Dobbins being the future, but, you know, he hurt himself at the end of the year last year. They had the bye week. You know, he didn't play week 17. So they had the bye week and a couple of extra, you know, days to get him right for the playoffs. But I don't think he was 100% in that game against the Titans. And he's such a big part of what this offense is that they probably want him at his best November, December, January. And for their case, you know, hopefully February. But I think they're going to ease him back a little bit just to make sure he's right by the end of the year.
Yeah. And I just want to say, for those of you who think that I'm YPC for life, if I were, and I'm a Miami Hurricane, I would be all about Gus Edwards. 5.3 yards per carry in his career and 270 carries. But I don't think he's very good. All right. So I just wanted to defend myself. Always have to do that when I'm on my show, which is weird. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll look at Scott's team. He can justify all his picks. We can pick them apart. And then we'll talk about the Scott Fishbowl. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
He's got Patrick Mahomes. He's got Mark Andrews, Nick Chubb, Joe Mixon. It's pretty good. How about those wide receivers? Devontae Parker, Jarvis Landry, and Christian Kirk, and Will Fuller as his flex. All right, that's Scott Fish's team. Welcome back to Fantasy Football Today. Okay, Heath, I'll just get it out of the way. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make sure that Scott thanked you for allowing him to be on your show.
Did you reach out to Scott? Did you tell Scott to come on?
It's clearly your show. We're just all a part of it.
I think I told you to have Scott on, did I not?
You sort of did. I said, yeah, which, yeah, you kind of did. Yeah. I said, which guest should I get? I said, please say Scott Fish. Jamie said, get Scott Fish.
My whole plan was get Scott on the show, lose $500, and get you to play in a fun fantasy league. That was my entire plan.
Works for me.
Brilliant plan.
Hey, yeah, actually, if we could bring in our producer, Ben Schrager, back from vacation. Ben, did you do your homework assignment?
Oh, absolutely.
You watch Tommy. Who's calling you?
That's definitely my grandparents checking in on their house.
You watch Tommy Boy. What'd you think?
Watch Tommy Boy. Hilarious.
Yes. Excellent.
Honestly, so many good lines. Was shocked that it was that funny. And now you usually don't have great recommendations.
No, that's not true with movies. I'm great with movie recommendations.
What? You told me to stop watching Homeland.
I did. Is Homeland a movie?
Okay, so you're just terrible at TVs.
Fine. I'll accept that. But I'm great with movies.
I will say this. I don't think I've told you this, Adam. I finally watched Prisoners, and it was very good.
Oh, hell yeah, man. All right, Scott Fish, give me a movie recommendation. Somebody says, hey, I really want to watch a movie tonight. What should I watch?
Man, how popular. Have you seen Logan Lucky?
I've never heard of it.
Okay, watch Logan Lucky then.
Okay.
Hey Scott, I had a question for you too.
Kind of like a heist movie. Yeah.
Have you seen the Avengers movies?
Yes, just went through all of them with my son.
The 2012 Avengers. Avengers.
Okay.
Some people on this podcast or one person may have said it's just not that good. I've seen all of these scenes in the Transformers movie.
Oh boy, comparing that to a Michael Bay movie is no.
I'm telling you, you watch that last. I don't know how long it was. I just was tuning in. It was on like TNT, and I was like, "Gosh, this just looks like Transformers. They're just destroying a city. This is not as good as I thought it was, as I thought it would be."
Okay.
I really liked Endgame, or I don't know, the one after that, maybe?
Endgame would be the end.
I think they all lead up to it. And I guess I can kind of see your point. If you watched them in a row, stop right there. This is me trying to be nice. I can see that you probably just saw a ton of action, but it's such a culmination of all these other superheroes in those movies getting together for one movie. And that movie's kind of unique in the series, really fun in the series, because it has a huge battle scene that's just awesome. And that's halfway through the movie. And then there's another one at the end. I'm a big fan of that movie.
So we're doing the same thing you did. We're going through chronologically in like the order that things happened with my 10-year-old right now. Yeah. And I think that is still either first or second. I think we're up to Ant-Man tonight, but it's still first or second in our rankings.
Yeah.
Ant-Man.
Adam just sent Schrager a note saying, clip that. I see your point.
Listen,
that's exactly what he did.
Doesn't Ant-Man kind of feel like the Marvel people just kind of ran out of ideas and they were like, all right, what else can we do?
It's the Adam Azer of Avengers for sure.
Man.
But Paul Rudd is amazing though.
He's amazing. He's funny. Ant-Man is probably one of my son's favorite of the Marvel series just because he's so funny.
It's just kind of a ridiculous character. I just think like Ant-Man, that's a superhero.
He's probably in the middle for me, but he's good.
Mosquito Man.
Our podcast for the first thing time saying the same thing about you, Adam. He's just kind of a ridiculous character.
Plus, he Chris can Evans turn into and Paul giant, Rudd
some sort of podcast together or something. I forget what it was. And apparently, they filmed Paul Rudd doing some sort of scene from Grease. They pranked him on his first day on the set. But one of the things they said was Paul Rudd has three of the biggest genres or groups of shows. He's been on Friends, he's in Marvel, and he's in the Judd Apatow group, you know, with Anchorman. Like he hits like almost every benchmark.
He's also in the Wet Hot American Summer group, which is the State people, for those of you who grew up watching The State. So yeah, he's all over the place, and he's grown. I didn't love Paul Rudd at first, but now I'm a huge fan.
You have a lot of time to do those things when you don't age.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was watching Clueless a couple weeks ago. He looks like younger now than he did in Clueless. It's kind of crazy. All right. All right. So let's go to Scott's team here. So you already mentioned you took two running backs for the first two picks. He had the ninth pick, was it? Ninth pick? Tenth. Tenth pick?
Tenth.
Tenth pick. Okay. So Joe Mixon round one, Nick Chubb round two. No beef there. Good stuff. Round three, Patrick Mahomes. And then round four was Mark Andrews. All right. So that was interesting. Yep. You still had David Montgomery and Melvin Gordon and Le'Veon Bell on the board, but you already had two running backs. Robert Woods, Odell Beckham, Amari Cooper. They could have been your first wide receivers.
Yeah, actually, my first wide receiver, I was torn, and it took me down to four ticks on the clock to take Mahomes over Calvin Ridley, and then Jamie went and took him with the next pick, which I love seeing because that just confirms that I was at least in the right area. Yeah. And then my plan was to take A.J. Brown on the other side, and then Jamie took him. So I quickly pivoted to go with a top three tight end and just grab a ton of safe, plus a mixture of safe and upside wide receivers later. I figured having that top quarterback, top wide receiver, and two top running backs, I could play around a little with the end of my draft.
Okay. And then you ended up taking your wide receivers, Devontae Parker, Jarvis Landry, Christian Kirk, and Will Fuller as your flex.
You also got your favorite receiver.
Oh, yeah. All right. So Scott's from Minnesota. He's a Vikings fan. Mm-hmm. I've been saying that I think Justin Jefferson... And I don't have a ton of conviction about this, okay? I admit. Because I think it's a toss. I really think it's a toss-up. Like, predicting who the best rookie wide receiver is going to be, I don't know how you could sit there and be super confident in the pick it right now. I think it's going to be Justin Jefferson. I just think he has an obvious role to slot into, pun intended. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think Thielen will have to bounce outside a little bit more. They've already talked about in Minnesota that they're going to move Justin Jefferson inside. I mean, he was sliding in college, obviously, but they're going to move in, have him inside a lot. I think it's a good spot for him. I went on a podcast just 2 weeks ago and said the same exact thing, Adam, that you just said, which almost scares me that we're agreeing on. No, I'm just kidding. But I said,
you said other people, Transformers?
No, CeeDee Lamb is in a you know, more of a crowded situation, and so does Jerry Jeudy and Justin Jefferson. He's going to have every shot in the world to start from day one, unless you have supremely high belief in Tajay Sharp or something. I think Justin Jefferson could be on the field a ton. I know it's a run heavy offense, but there's still some room to operate. And I don't disagree with that take. And I liked getting him really late for what he could possibly produce.
And I just want to tell people the last 10 years who the number one rookie wide receiver has been and where he's been selected among wide receivers in the NFL draft. It's usually like a top six wide receiver in the draft. Mike Williams in 2010 was 15th. Victor Cruz was an undrafted free agent in 2011. It's gotten better, put it this way. T.Y. Hilton in 2000.
Really, bravo. Yeah, hold on. I would expect with that information, you would just say the last 8 years.
I'm not. So 2012, T.Y. Hilton was the 13th wide receiver selected. Justin Blackman, I believe, was actually number one in PPR, though. T.Y. Hilton in non-PPR. And Blackman was the first wide receiver selected. Since then, Keenan Allen was the 8th wide receiver. Odell Beckham was the 3rd. Amari Cooper was the 1st. Michael Thomas, 6th. Juju Smith-Schuster, 6th. Those guys are both second-round picks. Calvin Ridley, 1st wide receiver. A.J. Brown, 4th wide receiver drafted, 2nd-round pick. So, usually a top six guy in recent years, that would be Justin Jefferson, 1st-round pick. It's been a first or a second-round pick finishing as the number one wide receiver 6 straight seasons. So, he fits the criteria. And all I'm saying is, it's not the guy that we always expect. Well, we have
Scott,
a history of that.
You do more drafts, obviously, outside of our group. I know you've done a couple with us already, but the mock drafts that you've seen, has it been mostly Lamb and Judy as the first rookie receivers off the board? Because that's what we see.
Yeah, it is. It
wouldn't surprise me at all if it's just based on opportunity, if it's Jefferson, if it's now Ayuk because of the Deebo Samuel injury. It could be Henry Ruggs, who was the first receiver drafted, but he could step into a big role, obviously, with the Raiders, but we just don't expect them to be a high-volume passing offense. I know Heath likes Denzel Mims, with his opportunity for the Jets. Could be a significant surprise, let's say, like an Antonio Gandy-Golden, if, let's say, Terry McLaurin got hurt, somebody like that. But I think Jefferson, Ayuk, Mims, maybe Pittman if Hilton got hurt again and struggled with injuries. But those guys that are stepping into significant roles may not be as talented as Lamb or Judy, but they have better opportunities like we saw last year with some of those other rookies.
Yep. Those early seasons in a player's, I'm a talent over situation guy, but in those first season or two, situation matters a whole lot. Situation can change later, and that's why you want the talent in dynasty leagues. But in the first year or two, like now, absolutely players like that can get a lot of reps on the field if they have a wide open.
And you drafted Mims, and Mims is, this is not a shot at their talent. Those guys, Jefferson's extremely talented, as we saw at LSU. And Ayuk, I think a lot of people overlook him because he played at Arizona State, but and they get a lot of the same hype. But, again, opportunity is huge for him.
I knew Adam was going to make that remark about first and second year wide receivers, and that's why every wide receiver I drafted was a top 60 pick in the NFL draft. I knew it beforehand, so I just wanted to make sure I had them on my team.
Man, like, if you're taking a wide receiver who was picked after the 3rd round of the NFL draft, good luck. Not many of them hit, honestly. I think Tyreek Hill was after the 3rd round, right? But he fell because of character issues. So there's those situations. But that's what I really noticed, is that it really does matter how early you're drafted with running backs and with wide receivers. And I think after the day three picks do not have a great track record. At those two positions.
The Stephon Diggs and Antonio Brown types are a rarity.
Yeah, they happen for sure, but they are not the norm. All right, do you guys have anything that you'd like to say about Scott's team? As I mentioned, Devontae Parker, Jarvis Landry, those were his 5th and 6th round picks, and then Christian Kirk and Will Fuller. So he went with 4 straight wide receivers. Before we get to that, let me ask you why you took Tony Pollard. You don't have Ezekiel Elliott. In fact, Heath does. To piss off Heath? Because that would be, I'll donate $500 if that was the reason.
Oh my gosh. Now you're putting me in a position where, as a guy who doesn't lie, should I lie for $500 for charity? No, that is not. It wasn't to piss off. At that point in the draft, I just wanted upside running back because I had two safe, secure, what I thought to be safe, secure running backs. I needed to grab a couple upside running backs that if their starter went down, they would be giant. And I think Tony Pollard might, you know, has okay flex value some weeks on his own. But the two running backs I took later in that draft, Tony Pollard where I did, and Anthony McFarland for Pittsburgh really late. Those guys, if Connor goes down, if Zeke goes down, I have, you know, potential game win or league winning studs at running back. So I took shots like that later in the draft after I got my, you know, core secure.
Final I think thoughts? The one thing that I would have done differently is probably just given a little bit safer third back than, you know, cause I mean, Chubb and Mixon, if healthy, are never coming out of your lineup outside of their bye weeks, but you know, you could be in trouble if Zeke is healthy and James Conner is healthy, or even if Conner goes down and it's a Snell McFarland split and you're not getting the type of production that you're hoping for. So, you know, I understand why you probably went a little bit more wide receiver heavy after not taking a receiver until the spot that you did. But this is an illustration. It's amazing to have top three quarterback and tight end, like you said, Scott, with two, you know, top 10 caliber running backs. But this is the type of receiving core that you're left with if you go that route. And Parker, if he replicates his numbers from last year, could be great. As we know, Fuller, if he plays 16 games, could, you know, shatter his ADP and where you drafted him. And Landry's always been good and safe when healthy. But there's, you know, these are guys that are more, I think, at least the way I view them, in the number three receiver range as opposed to even a number one or number two. Parker would certainly profile that based on what he did last year. But this is the give and take. You know, if you want studs at one spot, or in your case, studs at two spots, when we talk about going receiver or excuse me, quarterback and tight end early, this is what you potentially sacrifice.
Yep. And part of the problem with getting that, I would have loved to get that RB3, but when I build a team like this, I want to get four or five, or even, you know, six wide receivers, four or five, definitely four or five wide receivers that I can rotate because the other parts are so secure. But you're right. It really crushed my RB3 spot. And one injury to one of those starters, and I'm in big trouble.
And I guess just looking at the results, you know, you took Christian Kirk at the end of round 7 and Will Fuller in round 8. You could have passed over those guys, one of them, and taken, how do you feel about this? You could have taken Damian Williams, Matt Breida, Tevin Coleman, Ronald Jones, Philip Lindsay, Tariq Cohen, Kerryon Johnson. You know, do those guys sound appealing?
Not super appealing, but considering the point in draft and where my running backs were sitting with no third running back, it might have been a smarter move to grab one of them. Maybe even earlier, maybe even after that first wide receiver or two, taking a better shot.
Okay, Scott, thank you for participating in that. Thank you for going through your team. Let's talk about the Scott Fishbowl. Okay, have you memorized all the rules, all the scoring rules?
It's easy. It's not that difficult.
All right, what do we got?
Running backs and wide receiver. Or let's start with passing. Passing is your normal for yardage. Touchdowns are 6 points in this. Interceptions are -4. But here's where it gets wonky for you, Adam. Basically, you want accurate quarterbacks who don't take sacks, because if you get more than a 67% passer completion percentage, you get bonus points basically. And if you get sacked, you get hit with a -1. So that's where the wonkiness comes. The rest isn't that difficult. Just get accurate quarterbacks that don't get sacked.
But are there points for completions and negative for incompletions?
Yep, that's the completion percentage. It's 1 point, -1 for an interception, and +0.5 for a completion.
-1 for an incompletion.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
-4 for an interception.
-4 for an interception.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So the quarterback -5 for an interception.
The quarterbacks. Oh, right. Yeah, I suppose. The quarterbacks are where it gets wonky. For the running backs and wide receivers and tight ends, it's not that different.
Yeah.
It's a half PPR league, and you also get a half point per first down. So
you get the 1.5 per tight end reception.
So yeah, tight ends are premium. Yep. So basically it's not a whole lot different than your normal league.
I am doing a mock. Well, not really a mock, I guess. It's a best ball league with the Scott Fishbowl rules set up by John Bosch. And I was going to have Scott rank my start, so I know if I know what I'm doing, because I'm not sure that I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I am maybe the worst record in Scott Fishbowl history. With the sixth pick.
Wait, Heath, before you go, Scott, for every negative comment you say toward Heath, Adam will make $500.
Oh, boy.
I made a mistake in the first round, I think, probably. But with the sixth pick, I took Alvin Kamara. And I think I probably should have taken Travis Kelce. He went one pick later. With my second round pick, I was surprised he was there, but you're probably going to tell me I shouldn't have been. I took Tyreek Hill at 2.7. And then I do my first quarterback at 3.6. I got Tom Brady, and I was surprised he was there because I expect he's going to have a good completion percentage and not get sacked very often.
Yeah, that's a fairly good quarterback to get in the third round. But as your QB1, I'd rather have him as my QB2. But I think every draft's going to be different. It feels like quarterbacks are lasting a little longer this year than they were in the past.
Well, I think people are scared of, I mean, Jameis Winston's not a starter this year, but the Jameis Winston type season, which was great in regular fantasy, but would have been awful last year in this format, right?
Yeah, he would have dropped probably 15 to 20. I think he went from QB 6 to 16, actually, in this scoring.
Yeah.
Scott, what's your ideal build?
My idea build for just a normal league or a fishbowl league?
Fishbowl.
Fishbowl, I want to get one stud running back early. It's start two and it's a bunch of flexes. So just one stud running back in the first four rounds. I usually want a tight end in the first four rounds, and I want two QBs in the first four rounds. That's the way I want to start. And after that, you know, that's when I start hammering wide receivers and yep. backup running backs.
Like, I think your draft in our mock is a better Scott Fish draft in the fishbowl.
It wouldn't be bad at all. I'd like more quarterbacks in Superflex, but that would be a decent start, especially in the fishbowl where you can have four flexes. A lot of those guys I have there with upside are getting in the lineup.
Scott,
you could have gone Mahomes, Andrews. I doubt you get Mixon and Chubb, but I mean maybe Andrews around three.
Yeah, I could probably get three of those four in the first three rounds.
But Andrews is not a high catch guy, and it's 1.5 points. So he loses value in the Scott Fish Bowl, does he not?
I still think he'd probably be top three or four because those first downs make up for it, and he scores a lot of touchdowns. And touchdowns count as first downs too. If people listening don't know that and they want to jump into points per first down leagues, the NFL tracks as their stats first down touchdowns as first downs. So because of that, stat providers do, and because of that, you know, league hosts do. So
like he catches a 10-yard touchdown pass. It's like a 10-point play.
Yeah. So a touchdown is really 7 points for a tight end.
Tight end is so interesting.
Zach Ertz had more first down catches than Mark Andrews last year, for what it's worth. And now, like, first downs are foreign to a lot of people, and to me, honestly, like, I don't really have a concept of what to look for.
Well, you get 10 yards to get a first down.
Most
teams punt on fourth down. If
right?
They get it.
Okay. So I have to write that down. I never remember that, but because you know you watch the Eagles, they never punt. I'm looking at the leaders from last year, and Ezekiel Elliott, Chris Carson, Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson led the NFL with first down runs. At 78 to 71 rushing touchdowns. Well, they were over 70. You look at receiving leaders, Michael Thomas had 91. Julio Jones had 77 first downs. Those are the only guys that got to 70. Do quarterbacks get points for first downs or just running backs?
Well, okay. Well, if they run a first down.
So Lamar Jackson has to be the first pick.
He's going to be a consensus top three. That's for
like
sure.
Because of the first downs, he had 71 rushing first downs last year.
Yeah. But he's probably not going to run as much.
Okay, but he's going to probably blow away the field in terms of rushing first downs, right? He doesn't throw a lot of interceptions.
Oh, yeah.
I would think he'd be the first pick. If I were picking first, I'd pick him.
I think there are people that will.
You can't pass on McCaffrey.
I was going to look. I think he went second in hours. I believe I was going to pull it up. I believe, and I can just, it went McCaffrey, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Barkley, Elliott, Kamara, Kelce, Dak, Michael Thomas, Davante Adams. That was our top 10.
So you're picking sixth, right?
I was sixth, yeah.
In your real draft, too.
Correct.
Right. And I'm picking seven. So, like, in my mind, I'm taking one of the quarterbacks if they fall, which I don't think they will. One of the backs of the top four, if they fall, I won't take Cook, and then Kelsey. If I think four running backs, two quarterbacks, and then I get to seven, I'll take Kelsey.
My big decision is going to be Alvin Kamara or Travis Kelsey. And that's going to be, I have not decided which direction. Scott, who should I take?
I'd take Kelsey, but yeah. I'm such a, I like securing that tight end early.
Would you go Kelsey Kittle?
I did last year. So yes, I would. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of that move. I was closer to the back corner. So,
and for what it's worth, Kittle did not make it to I don't think you can, I don't know that you'll be able to do that.
Was the back.
Oh, I don't think I will. I was just, considering if it did happen.
Do we know how many, I'm trying to look up, where's a good resource to look up first downs? Because I have a very short list here.
Yeah, there's places out there. I know 4for4 has them. I wish I knew better firsthand or off the top of my head. Some good places. I know 4for4 has them, but it's pretty Googleable. It's getting more and more out there and popular.
Yeah, NBC Sports has a list, but they only go like 20 deep. So
Adam played in a first down league last year.
I did. I'm not sure I realized it, but I did. I'm just trying to figure out how many McCaffrey had. McCaffrey had 58 receiving and like 57 rushing first downs.
Yeah, they're very correlated to touches and targets. Yeah. If you follow the projected targets, it's gonna be pretty correlated to first downs for wide receivers at least.
All right, Scott, man, great stuff. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, man. This is great. Thanks for having me.
Heath and Jamie, it was great to speak to you as well.
Always. It was nice for him to have you on his show.
Yes, thank you, Adam. We appreciate it.
Man, this is like when Jax on Vanderpump Rules said it was his show. Am I right, people? Am I right, Vanderpump? All right, we're out of here, everybody. We got the top five biggest backfield battles coming up on your Tuesday show. Heath, you still have to reply to the email so I know which backfields to talk about. So, just try to do that. So I can,
always programming your show.
So I can plan my show. I really appreciate that. Thanks again to Scott Fish. We'll talk to you all later. Follow him on Twitter at ScottFish24. Donate to a charity. Do good things. And thanks for Jamie for that donation that he made on the air. That was amazing. Talk to you Tuesday. Bye, everyone.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.